Hvis du går og tror, du ved, hvad kunstig intelligens er, så tog du om igen. Det er nemlig hverken Skynet, der overtager verden, eller en undsigende computer, der nægter at følge ordre. Jeg hedder Lars Benelsen, og du lytter til Tech Talk episode 17, hvor vi skal blive lidt klogere på kunstig intelligens. Lige så længe jeg har arbejdet med computer, og det er nu snart over 30 år, så har jeg hørt om begrebet kunstig intelligens. I dag kalder vi det primært for AI, bare sådan for at være lidt popsmarte, men det er altså en og samme ting. Og det er blevet smart at snakke om AI, sådan i rigtig smart. Så nu er der AI i min smartphone, der er AI i min bil, og der er AI i mit sikkerhedsvand på min computer. Må ikke der også er AI i min næste vaskemaskine og robotplæneklipper? Og AI, det bliver brugt i flæng. For hvad er AI i virkeligheden? Dækker det over en fuldt bevidst robot, der kan tænke, drømme og tage beslutninger helt uden vores indblanding? Er det et autonomt system, der har et begrænset frirum? Er det et begreb, der bliver brugt i mangel på et bedre ord? Og hvordan er det lige med machine learning? Er det også AI? Eller er AI noget mere? Jeg har snakket med Matti Axeler, Vice President Artificial Intelligence hos sikkerhedsfirmaet F-Secure, for at finde ud af, hvad pokker AI er. Om vi skal være bange for, at det udvikler sig til Skynet, og ikke mindst om, hvordan vi bruger AI eller machine learning i sikkerhedsprodukter, som dem F-Secure leverer til os. De næste 37 minutter kan du høre mit interview med Matti, og jeg håber, at du bliver meget klogere på AI og på machine learning. So, Matti, I'd like to start by asking you if you could please introduce yourself, to give me an idea of who you are. So you work with F-Secure, I know that much, and you're an expert in AI, but if you could perhaps just give me a brief introduction to yourself.
Sure, happy to do that. But first, thanks for having me in the discussion. It's my honor to be here. So I'm Matti Axeler, working at F-Secure, actually only about 1.5 years at F-Secure, but so my cybersecurity background is still fairly short and knowledge is definitely growing on that front, but I've been working with different types of machine learning and artificial intelligence solutions for some time in different kind of domains. Mm-hmm. First on the academic side and then in a few companies called Extract, Comptel, but different fields, telecoms. It's always been about using data and machine learning to kind of bring value out of those.
Yeah, and so AI something. And machine learning is in your DNA.
Well, I've been trying to work with them for a while, as I just keep putting it like that.
Yeah. Cool, sounds great. Well, as I talked, we're going to talk about AI today. We're going to be talking about machine learning, and we're going to be talking about cybersecurity. But I'd like to start off first by asking you about AI and machine learning, because I hear those two terms being used, you know, interchangeable. People really don't. They either use machine learning or AI, and I'd like to know, what is the difference between AI and machine learning?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good question. And, well, I don't know if there's a kind of a clear one-cut answer to that, but the way I see it is that artificial intelligence, AI, is kind of used as an umbrella term nowadays to cover a lot of different topics. Kind of, you could almost say it's basically anything that makes a computer make decisions or kind of mimic human cognitive functions. That's pretty much artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
To me, I think that's a fair definition. So it's quite a broad definition, covers a lot of things. Machine learning, then, is kind of, with that in mind, a subset of techniques that enable us to implement such functionality. So basically anything where you're learning from data, using algorithms to learn from data, is considered machine learning in my mind. So it's kind of, machine learning is a bit more practical. It's kind of a toolbox of techniques that can be used to implement this higher level concept of artificial intelligence. That's how I see it, at least.
So AI is kind of like the big, you said yourself, you use the term umbrella. It's kind of like a big term to describe the fact that machines can learn, whereas machine learning is a specific technology technology to use.
Yeah, or actually it's of course a big bunch of different types of algorithms and technologies, but it's kind of a, yes, it's a way to implement artificial intelligence.
And that brings me to, because when I started out as an IT journalist for close to 30 years ago, we talked a lot about neural networks. Mm. And there was kind of like neural networks, there was, you know, those neural networks at that time, that was AI. But how about today? I really never hear the term neural networks used anymore. We talk about AI, machine learning, we talk about algorithms. What happened?
That's true. Well, but on the other hand, I think we talk a lot about deep learning. So that's kind of a pretty popular thing. But at least, again, to me, how I see it is like neural networks, they're a subset, they're kind of a set of methods that are a part of machine learning. So you use data and computers to train models, and neural networks are one kind of a family of models, if you will. And then again, deep learning are a subset of neural networks. There are certain type of neural networks that tend to be very deep or kind of have a lot of layers, or the complex neural networks. So I don't know why. When I started off, I was doing research at the Neural Networks Research Center here in what is now Aalto University, but was then Helsinki University of Technology. So neural networks, they've been around since, I'd say, pretty much the 1960s at least. So for a while now, definitely a good set of methods. But you're right, we don't talk that much about them as neural networks nowadays, but deep learning, I think that's getting a whole lot of attention. So they're still alive. Alive and kicking.
So neural networks, is that actually deep learning?
I'd say deep learning is a type of a neural network. So kind of, because sometimes I envision this as kind of like bubbles inside them. So the largest sphere, the AI, is kind of covers all of these. Then machine learning is a subset of that. Mm-hmm. And neural networks are a subset of machine learning. And then deep learning is a subset of neural networks, because there's still a lot of other types of neural networks as well that are not deep learning, but are other networks.
So we're basically going deeper down the rabbit hole.
And deep learning, there are a bunch of very efficient methods, very good for the tasks that they are good for. So I think that's one of the things that kind of you see in machine learning or AI in general, that we don't really have that general intelligence yet, but we have a lot of efficient, very good methods for certain types of tasks. And it's all kind of, I tend to say often, there's no silver bullet, in my opinion, mm-hmm. when it comes to approaches. There's no one thing that will make everything work perfectly, and deep learning or any method is, there's no such method. But they have a lot of, like, for image recognition, deep learning networks are just amazingly good nowadays.
So I think also too, because not all of my listeners might know what neural networks and deep learning are, if you could be so kind as to just briefly say, this is what we understand about a neural network. This is the basic kind of neural network, and this is deep learning. Could you define those two terms?
Sure. I'll try at least. So, I'd say in principle, a neural network is, like the name says, it's a network of connected nodes. The idea is kind of trying to mimic the way the human brain works. We have a lot of neurons. They have a lot of connections between one another. And then through a combination of these rather simple processing units, you can actually form kind of circuits or networks of things that actually can accomplish surprisingly efficient and large things. The simplest neural networks, like simple feedforward neural networks, have just a few layers or connections. So there's a kind of an input layer where data comes in, and then that's connected to usually one or more hidden layers, which is basically just taking input from those neurons that actually see the data coming in, and then they're all interconnected, and then they can produce outputs. There can be one such hidden layer, or there can be a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And by deep learning, I guess at least originally was called deep, is that the networks are kind of deep. They have a lot of layers. Ah. So they're actually very complex networks. But then, of course, we've gotten to specifying different types of learning algorithms. There's convolutional neural networks and different types of neural networks that are then, again, a subset of deep learning models. It's a bit confusing, I admit, but it's a kind of a refining the definition. It's a certain type of neural network that is kind of gaining popularity nowadays. Also, because you could argue that when I was in the university, we had, just a fraction of the computing power at our disposal, even supercomputers, that is now available especially in the cloud-based platforms. So with this increased computational power, deeper networks have become more attractive on the compute and more kind of, it's basically possible nowadays to use deep neural networks for tasks.
Yeah. So because of the development technology, we can actually do those things that we dreamt about back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, pretty much, yes. Surprisingly large scale.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So one of the things that defines AI and perhaps to an extent machine learning is that we're talking about systems that are able to learn and take decisions without human interference. Is that still a valid definition? And if so, how do they actually do that?
I would say yes. I think kind of the biggest difference between machine learning and kind of traditional programming is that in a way the goal is to use algorithms to learn from the data. So I think, I don't remember where I first saw, but there was actually a diagram that somebody had drawn that made kind of, if you think about trying to visualize it here in my words, but in traditional programming, you have a program, then you give it some data and it gives you some kind of an output. That's kind of really high level how it works. So you, in a way, it's rather deterministic. Kind of you define a program to do something when it's like a rule is an example of a, like if the age of the person is below something, then they can do something or whatever, kind of making a very kind of concrete rule of something. When in machine learning, the idea is in the first stage when you're training the model is that you actually don't know what the relationship between these variables should be. You just get a lot of data, the input data, but then you usually have in supervised learning, at least you have an output. So you know kind of what you want to get out of this data, what's the right output you want to see. And then you use the algorithms to train the model, which is usually actually just like finding the right parameters in your model so that they're getting the input matches the output as well as possible. So kind of as the training phase, the output is actually the parameters for the model, which you can then take and apply on new data to get an output again. So you're using kind of an iteration or multiple iterations to train your model based on the data that you're getting to reach the conclusion that you're hoping to get.
And basically you end up with a system that has been optimizing itself, and we as operators or as human beings have no idea what it's done. We just know that it has.
Yeah, that's especially in some cases that is true. That's actually one of the challenges of these complex models that are sometimes like black boxes. But then again, that doesn't apply to all types of machine learning models. There's different families, if you will. In some ways, the deep learning or very complex neural networks are actually most challenging because they tend to be quite hard to decipher when you have hundreds of millions of parameters in your model and you can't really exactly see how one impacts the other. But yeah, then there's some models which are kind of more probabilistic by nature. So you're in a way looking at probability distributions and conditional probabilities and defining relationships. So there's different approaches to this, but yes, definitely you're correct.
Yeah, because if I look at traditional code, if I code an app or if I code anything else, I mean, I can go in and look and say, this has happened, this is the code, and this is what the code actually does. But it's my understanding that a fully trained neural network or AI, you cannot, that's not a code you can go and decipher and say, oh, this is how it does things.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely for the most complex models, it's kind of, well, I guess you could argue that, yes, in principle, because it is kind of a network with weights, you could kind of go through and you can give it different types of data and see what comes out. But for example, one of the things that I like to kind of emphasize when I'm talking about machine learning and with the risks is also that if you train your model on certain types of data, it will be by definition kind of learning from that data alone, not all the data that's available. So it's very easy for somebody who doesn't consider this to train like machine learning classifiers that work really well, but then apply them to a different scenario and it's no longer applicable at all. There's lots of examples of such cases, and unless you in a way understand that, it's really kind of very dependent on the data that you're using for training. You might make, in a way, false assumptions that it should generalize under something that the model wasn't essentially built to do. And that's kind of when things can get
tricky. So you train it on a data set that has a lot of false answers in it, you're going to get a crappy AI or machine learning system in the other end.
Yeah, exactly. It is kind of, it's the old saying, garbage in, garbage out. So if the data doesn't show what you wanted to, what you need to know from that, it's not magic. It can't, it only learns from the data.
But did you say that AIs today or machine learning systems, they're pretty complex. Watson is an example of an AI that's pretty complex. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes. Definitely. There's a lot of complexity. Yes.
So that brings me to a question that I as a person and even as a journalist need to ask: do we need to worry? Because AI, we've seen all these movies, you know, where AI becomes sentient. Terminators like Skynet, that's a sentient AI. Is that something you can see could happen? I'm not saying it's gonna, but potentially could it happen?
Well, it is possible, and of course, kind of people are in a way striving towards that. So sometimes it's called like artificial general intelligence. Will it happen in the near future? At least I personally don't think it's very likely.
Mm.
There are a lot of things that kind of a little bit get in the way if you think about it. So what we have right now is essentially methods to focus on narrow tasks, like image recognition. Kind of it's a huge task, but it's still kind of narrowly defined. Mm. Or like self-driving cars.
Yeah.
It's still the kind of AI in these systems, it can't make you coffee. It can't have a kind of a discussion with you. It can't draw, it can't generate, it can't have a lecture, or it can't have this kind of a discussion we're having. They're very narrow and they can be much more efficient than humans can be in tailored, very narrow solutions when the kind of context is right. But it's actually a really, really big step from that to having something that's kind of conscious and truly intelligent.
Mm.
Because that's kind of, there's a lot of things to be kind of sorted out if we kind of as mankind want to have conscious machines. I don't know if that's even how much, does that really make sense in the grand scheme of things? But to be honest, my kind of thinking is more about, I guess, having done this for a while, I'm pretty pragmatic about it in the sense that what we have as AI or machine learning methods and tools and solutions can help a lot already today.
Yeah.
They can help us solve problems much better. They can, being from a cybersecurity company, they can help us keep our customers safe. They can help in different kind of domains and areas, healthcare, many different solution areas. And there's a lot of value in that. So kind of trying to even replicate or mimic the human conscious process, to me, sometimes it feels like a little bit like if we're trying to build an airplane, should we try to have it have feathers and flapping wings on it coming? Should we even approach it from kind of copying a way of doing things? Or should we try to see what's really the best way to solve the problems with these technologies and tools? And if we're focusing more on that perspective, I think there's just so much value to be gained by using these methods, solutions that...
So because
all the,
I was just wondering, because all the AIs we then see today, because as you said yourself, we're focusing on narrow tasks. So because they have a very small scope of things, the data they've been trained on, tasks they can accomplish, the leap from there to any kind of sentience in the AI itself is so big that it's not really a concern.
It is, yeah, exactly. So that's what I think.
Yeah.
But again, in a way, it is fascinating to think about this kind of an academic or even just like a exercise of mind to think like what it would mean to have an intelligent machine and could be. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think definitely it's not happening right now. It's not right around the corner. And I don't wake up the night being worried about Skynet taking over and seeing things happen. I think there's a lot of opportunities and kind of a lot of potential. And to me, it's still kind of like a and machine learning, AI, they're an extremely valuable tool and something that we should continue to kind of foster and help make us as human beings better decisions and do our jobs better and so forth.
Yeah, so let's view AI and machine learning as a helping hand and not as a potential threat.
Yeah,
I have a few AI and security questions, but I just one question popped into my notes, more perhaps even more a remark, because I bet you read Isaac Asimov, you know, the sci-fi writer who wrote about the robotics and Three Laws of Robotics. He had this artificial brain as well, and I remember when I read about neural networks when I grew up, I thought, wow, his brains at that time, the way he described them, that's a neural network. So was he kind of one of the first who envisioned an artificial intelligence based on the technology that actually came true?
When was this? When were those books written?
Oh, he wrote them back in the 50s.
Well, that's kind of, I think, wasn't, still, that was kind of like the time frame, actually, when we were starting, in a way, the artificial intelligence, also the scientific side was coined. So I think there might have been kind of partially exchange of ideas as well. I don't know for sure, but just speculating. So I think it was kind of, there was a lot of, I think the workshop where this term AI was coined, was it, I should remember the year, but in mid-50s, was it 56 maybe, thereabouts anyway. So basically, there was a lot of thinking at that time, like how can we make, because computers were just emerging, and of course there was a lot of visions and ideas how this could be. So I think there's been some cross-pollination between ideas and kind of actually like literature and science fiction and so forth, and then kind of the academic side going ahead.
Yeah, I just remember growing Isaac as a kid in the 60s and 70s, I was fascinated by Isaac Asimov's view of technologies and especially his Three Laws of Robotics. So I was kind of like, you cannot hurt a human being, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So Laws of Robotics, still very very current, I think.
So. Yeah. Yeah, he thought it through. So the second half of questions I have to you is about AI when it comes to consumers, when it comes to security. And the first question goes that I've seen AI and security being mentioned a lot over the last year or 2 years. And it's kind of become a buzzword. But is it really something that's going to make a difference in consumer products and in business products? And if so, how?
I think it definitely is already making a difference. I think kind of, but you are really, really kind of so correct on AI having become such a buzzword. I would say not even just in security, but well, almost everywhere that people think now, well, being kind of a technical person, I just see so many cases where somebody's claiming AI and it's like a rule-based system. Well, I think, you could kind of make the argument that it is kind of AI, but that's nothing entirely new. But the thing is that, of course, kind of the data volumes are definitely growing all the time. So there's more and more information. Things happen faster and faster. There's more of the connectivity. Like go back 20 years, it was a whole different world in that sense, so in terms of the kind of speed of things propagating, whether that be like malware or malicious actors being able to reach computer systems from the other side of the world with no effort at all nowadays. So this kind of speed and amount of data are some key drivers, in my opinion, that really helps. But almost drives the requirement for technologies also that are kind of capable of handling that amount of data.
Mm-hmm.
And I think machine learning, especially kind of in a way, machine learning as a method of implementing AI is really at its best when there's a lot of data and there's kind of no way for a human being to go through all of that. So even just the volume of malware being generated, different types of kind of intrusions that you might envision happening in a computer system. These are all kind of scenarios where it's really hard to enumerate those cases and add even quite practical rules to detect them. And then when something changes a little bit, when you have a machine learning model that's in a way trying to estimate the similarity of a certain pattern being similar to something that we know to be malicious. That's really where they are. Their best well-trained machine learning models with kind of good feedback can make a huge difference there. So I think it's very much real. It is a kind of a real phenomenon. It's not totally new. So even at F-Secure, we've had machine learning models in production for many years. But I guess, yeah, people are talking more and more about it. So
yeah. That's true for sure. Yeah, because I've things right. Like 2 years ago, I saw for the first time really a security company talked about AI being used as a defense, as a system actually, where they only deployed a very very small client on the endpoint, and don't know, that took care of things. But my question really goes. So AI, is that going to exist on my computer, or is it going to exist, on your end, like F-Secure's servers, to analyze these huge amount of data that you collect, or is it going to be a combination where it's going to be an AI in both worlds?
I think it's definitely the combination, and kind of like I don't see AI as being, in particular, our products. If I may use as an example, our intrusion detection solutions.
Yeah.
Like as one example, so
sure.
So basically, it's about collecting events from sensors, which then get sent to a cloud platform and backend, and then processed. And then we also have a kind of a service component where we have our rapid detection center guys who are then handling this for some of our customers.
Mm.
So just in that framework, so we currently have in production, we're using all the time. There's models which are processing these events as they come in, so estimating kind of anomalies from individual events. And then there's also kind of a larger platform for going through larger masses of data to see something where we're training the models, but also running kind of analysis on a longer period of time and detecting things that are happening on a kind of a wider place. And then there's also a component that takes the feedback from these experts and then refines the models to better understand that which ones of these detections made by the system are actually more likely to be real kind of incidents that we have to address with our customers. So it's kind of plugging. I sometimes think of it like we're trying to make the whole system more intelligent. But we're not saying that there's going to be one box of AI here, which is like it sounds like the silver bullet, which is kind of like plug in AI and make it magical. No, it doesn't really work like that. You really kind of have to build it in. You need to understand how things work. And then sometimes it might be a smaller thing. Sometimes it might be a bigger thing. But in a way, make the whole process better by improving all the components and making more use out of the data that we have at our disposal. Really kind of make a product and solution that in the end is just protecting the customers better.
So we're not going to see an AI system, an AI security system on my computer that's going to eliminate the way it works today, where we have some heuristics, some firewall running, we've got some pattern detection. We're not going to see an AI replacing all that. AI is going to be a supplement to that. Is that correct?
That's how I see it, at least. So if you have heuristics like malware detection, there's kind of basically the rules, pattern matching rules.
Yeah.
And that's a really efficient way to do it. So if you have that rule that matches like conclusively, I know that this is for a fact a malicious program because I can calculate the signature from it and make that match. I see no reason not to use that.
No.
But then when we have a lot of variation, kind of these, in a way, mutations of the malware that are almost the same, but not quite,
mm-hmm.
Then the whole process of kind of sending them back, analyzing them, seeing what happens, generating a new signature, and doing that all over again. Soon you wind up with billions of signatures and all that. You know, at some point, it's more efficient and it's faster. And it's a better way to protect the customer to also deploy intelligence into that matching process. So really complementing this, and also in the larger scheme of things, complementing the expert knowledge of what's happening inside, what's the kind of anatomy of a threat, if you will. What are the things we need to detect, and then making that work better by the use of machine learning. I believe that's the direction forward in cybersecurity.
So is AI going to help us, excuse me, so is AI going to help us, I hesitate to say win the war against the cybercrime because I don't think that's going to happen, but it's going to help us close the gap between you as the good guys and the hackers as the bad guys?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an invaluable tool already now. So it's not kind of like, I think, when I joined the company, we decided that we kind of establish what we call this Artificial Intelligence Center of Excellence with the kind of name AI there. But that was more actually just as a kind of a people seem to relate to that best. It's more reflective. Previously, we've been just talking about machine learning and such. So it's kind of a continuation.
Yeah.
It's been growing in these solutions in the different domains over time. And now we have tools at our disposal that are making it much faster to do the processing, the computing power in the cloud. All these are just helping the kind of machine learning models be more beneficial as we go along. And we'll continue to develop them. And there's always this thing that you need to have the right mix of understanding. I believe that you need to have the right mix of understanding of the domain that you're working in, and then the technologies and the methods that you want to apply to that domain, just to avoid these kind of problematic scenarios of kind of like, if I have a job interview with somebody who wants to be a data scientist, I'm always asking them and telling them, like, think about the algorithms that you're using. Kind of, what are you assuming when you're deploying such an approach? Don't just think of it as a black box. Just understand what's going on, because that helps you prepare for the scenarios that you didn't have in your training.
Yeah.
So kind of having this understanding of how things work on that level, and then having a strong cybersecurity expertise and understanding. Well, we call our approach like the man and machine, and that's really what we're doing here. Combine those, because that's what I believe to be the big way forward.
So you see it as we're going to get an edge in the defense against cybercrime by using AI. But isn't there a real risk that the hackers, the cyber criminals, they're going to be using AI against us?
I'm sure that's kind of very much a risk, and already there are many applications where AI can be used and probably is being used.
Yeah.
So, but that's also, in a way, that's also a reason why it would make no sense not to employ such methods, because the benefit, again, for AI is that fast speed and never gets tired, keeps on processing the data. Like if you take like you could say like some automated spam campaign would be an example of a kind of offensive or bad intending use of AI. If you're actually actively trying to change the way you do the messaging based on the responses that you're getting, you can tailor things. So in a way, to detect that from all these different types of samples, doesn't it only make sense to use kind of similar methods and have a machine learning that understands that actually these are very similar to previous samples, and these are most likely linked to one another, and then kind of detect those as being malicious before you've actually seen those kind of examples of malicious. So I think it does come down to a little bit of this like race against one another, but I guess it's a technology, so artificial intelligence or machine learning isn't inherently good or bad. It's like
that's kind of neutral, really.
Yeah, it's all about what you use it for and how you make most good out of it.
So when we're talking about AI and security, is that different ways to use it? I mean, you can analyze data with it, you can analyze behavior. Is it different ways to use AI in security?
There are, for sure. Just a few examples. So, first one that comes to mind probably for everybody is just malicious content or malware detection. So having malware classifiers that utilize machine learning to find likely kind of examples of software that are likely to be malicious, or web content or what have you. But there's also the kind of other side of this, which is in a way for parental control applications or securing, avoiding your children from getting exposed to potentially harmful and kind of inappropriate content. So content classification type of approaches, spam filtering, we already briefly covered on that topic. Lots of things around, for example, network traffic analysis, which is arguably a bit of a different domain, intrusion detection side. So when you especially have a larger, mostly corporate or academic institutions, networks, so detecting anomalous behavior to find intrusions in those, being able to profile the behavior of entities or users, again, to detect anomalies, so deviations from that profile. If somebody has hijacked your account, be able to detect that by having this kind of a silent monitoring, where I think it's actually a really good thing that nobody needs to go through that data, nobody needs to monitor it actively, but building a profile and being able to detect anomalies against that profile and then raise alerts for that.
Mm.
We can do things about even on the response action. So what should we do when we detect something? That can also be a good application of machine learning, because you have information on what were the outcomes of the solution. So making recommendations for security analysts as a tool. And then kind of like just exploring all that data and seeing that we see millions and millions of spam samples and malware samples, kind of doing this type of data analysis to find similarities between those in different ways, and trying to find like, okay, this is kind of a group of our cluster, we call it clustering in machine learning.
Yeah.
But similar sets of data within that huge mass. All these kind of, well, these are the ones that come to mind at least first.
So, Matty, the last question I have for you is, you've seen, I mean, obviously AI is a key element in security now and in the future. But apart from security, and this is going to be the last question, I promise you that, apart from security, is there anywhere that you can see AI being used with an advantage? I mean, not just because you can, but because this is actually a good thing.
Oh, that's a hard question from the perspective of where is it not being used or could it not be used. So I think actually, because all around, every domain that we can think of nowadays, it's more and more online, there's more and more data, there's more and more kind of digital kind of entities that we can use.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really kind of where it becomes beneficial. There's measurement data available. So I guess one of the application areas that has had a lot of AI use traditionally is marketing, so wondering the messaging, but also in kind of very positive scenarios like healthcare, for example,
yeah.
detecting cancer and kind of making prescription recommendations, again, in close collaboration with the healthcare professionals, computer vision, self-driving cars, education is one good example, so
yeah.
Kind of finding ways to help children learn, or even kind of people who are a bit older than children,
yeah.
Like myself, helping us kind of older people also learn new things much more effectively by being able to tailor the way information is presented to you in a format that is kind of appropriate for each one of us, because we are different, we are all individuals.
Yeah.
Environmental, like combating the pollution, being able to measure things and predict what's going to be, in the sad cases, a really bad time to go out. There's too much pollution in some countries. All this kind of whole bunch of different areas where we can get a lot of benefit out of it. And I guess it's really, again, kind of seeing how I see AI is something that can help people make more use of the data, utilize the data better and make better decisions by understanding or being able to incorporate more information into the process. Mm.
So
we humans, we're pretty good with limited amounts of data, but when you push forward these billions of events and thousands of different data points, we get overwhelmed. And I believe the kind of machine learning and data-driven algorithms can really help us make the most out of that information, make the most value out of it.
So to wrap up, AI is really anywhere where you can learn how to optimize by observing everyday patterns of behavior. That's where we can utilize AI as a technology.
Yes.
Thank you. Matty, it's been great having you on Tech Talk, and I hope to talk to you again. Perhaps I go visit sometimes in the near future, come to Helsinki, and I'll just pop by then.
I look forward to that. And thank you so much for having me on. It was a very, very interesting and fun discussion from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Matty. See you around.
See you. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Og så vil jeg gerne sige tak, fordi du lyttede med. Tech Talk er optaget live on tape. Jeg hedder Lars Benitzen. Og husk, at du kan besøge os på techtest.dk, samt følge os på både Twitter, Facebook og YouTube.